I want to talk real quick about Massey's race and what it means and why I see some hope that came out of the unfortunate loss. Now, obviously, the bad news is Thomas Massey lost his primary, which means we're going to lose one of our best members of Congress. The seat basically was bought out from underneath him. The establishment, the special interest group, spent about $40 million in dark money to prop up the other candidate and ultimately defeat Thomas Massey. Now, where's the good news? The good news is in the demographics of who voted for Massey and who voted for his opponent. People from, you know, about age 55 and down voted for Thomas Massey. This means, you know, two major things in my view. This means, number one, that Massey's voting record and his message of putting America first, having accountability, you know, for our corrupt elites, not getting us into any more foreign entanglements, getting foreign influence out of our politics, that resonates with younger voters. It also means that the younger voters won't be swayed by, you know, the number of television commercials they see on cable news, ads in the newspaper, you know, radio commercials, mailers being sent to their house, this traditional campaign media blitz that the dark money is able to purchase. It's not effective on the younger voters because the younger voters are getting their information from social media, from podcasts, from a wide variety of media sources that are much more free-flowing and have a much more free marketplace of ideas. So that gives me a lot of hope. This means if we can get the younger voters to get out there and to vote, if we can mobilize these younger voters, then we can start getting more America First politicians across the finish line. And in 2028, if we can build a broad populist America First coalition of independents, not Republicans, not Democrats, but independent-minded Americans who want to put our nation first, who don't think we should be fighting these foreign wars, who don't think that a foreign government like Israel should be able to come in and essentially, you know, buy a seat in Congress, we can build a coalition based on that. The numbers are there. We just have to organize it. Something else that I think is very telling from Thomas Massey's race and very, very important, and it represents an inflection point and a line of departure in MAGA. Massey drew the ire of President Trump when he pushed for the transparency of the Epstein files. And, you know, the whole Epstein topic, the Epstein class, the Epstein files, to me, it represents in spirit what President Trump stood against, what he campaigned against. Going back to 2016, President Trump promised to take on our elite, because that's what the Epstein class truly is. It's an elite group of people who don't play by the same rules as we do, whether it's, you know, victimizing women and children in the most horrific ways, or it's just playing by an entirely different set than the hardworking people in the United States of America. And so this Epstein class, it's what President Trump promised to be the solution to. He promised to fight them on our behalf. The Epstein class represents everything, you know, from the warmongers that vote to send our sons and daughters, our brothers and sisters, patriots like my late wife, off to go fight and die in foreign wars that don't benefit the American people. A war like we're in right now in Iran that Thomas Massey and many others stand against, that the vast majority of the American people don't support. The Epstein class also represents the financial class, the people who benefited from all the different financial crises that we have suffered and we've endured here in the United States. The Epstein class also represents the people who opened up our borders and let crime run amok on our streets while our law enforcement agencies and our intelligence agencies were weaponized against the American people. So President Trump promised to be the solution to this, but the second Thomas Massey called for accountability for the Epstein class, Trump turned against him. He turned against Massey, he turned against Marjorie Taylor Greene. He even just recently turned against Lauren Boebert because Boebert went out there and actually campaigned with Massey to try to get him across the finish line in his primary. And Boebert was also supporting the declassification and the transparency for the Epstein files themselves as well. And so it's a major line of departure, and it's very telling to see who is, you know, siding with President Trump as he seeks to, for some reason, protect the Epstein class, as he seeks to continue to send us off into pointless, endless wars, and who is staying true to the America First agenda, who's staying true to, you know, what used to be MAGA. So going forward, I think if we focus on mobilizing the younger voters, supporting people like Thomas Massey, supporting anybody who's willing to put our country first, and having a broad populist coalition of not Republicans, not Democrats, but independents, because most Americans, especially young Americans, they actually self-identify as independents. And if we can have a populist platform that says we're not going to get involved in these foreign entanglements, we're not going to let foreign governments come in and tell us how our government should conduct our foreign policy, we're not going to let foreign governments come in and buy our elections, and we're actually going to hold the corrupt elite in our country accountable.
so much work goes into this, and it's all funded by you going to thealexjonesstore.com. So this is a fundraiser time right now. We need to be raising funds because we are launching into the next stage of our, you know, rocket trip. We've shed one booster and now the new one's firing up, and we need you to fill our tank and give us the fuel to get to that next level. So please do go to thealexjonesstore.com. There is a mega sale going on right now. You're getting 40% off methylene blue tincture, methylene blue caps, Ultra DNA Revival, Shilajit caps and gummies, up to 35% off methylene red tincture, colostrum, and MK Ultra, and you're getting 30% off all apparel, shirts, hats, hoodies, and everything else. You know, what we sell you at thealexjonesstore.com are just like these amazing naturally occurring vitamins, minerals, supplements, just CMOS and Shilajit. It just is like God's gift to humanity. At some point, humanity discovers it, and get it at thealexjonesstore.com.
You're tuned in to the War Room Live with your host, Rex Jones.
We're doing today what's called broadcasting, ladies and gentlemen. It's called looking into the camera and talking to the world. I'm joined today by Joe Kent, who I had the honor of meeting in Grand Rapids at the Rage Against the War Machine event. He's with me now, and there's so much I wanted to interview you about and talk to you about. I think really the generational divide is something that I want to touch on, and really I love what you're saying about building a coalition of the younger people that are really against all this stuff and really abhor it at a deep level. But I want to start off by just kind of like color news of the day type of thing. This has been, you know, the 11th or 12th agreement Trump has claimed is going to be signed. Do you think a peace negotiation or a memorandum of understanding is going to go through?
I don't think so, man. And I was just looking at the news before he came on today, and he just got done, I guess, with his meeting. The Iranians came out and said that they kind of rejected what the president had laid out right in his Truth Social, or not necessarily rejected it, but said that, you know, it didn't properly characterize their understanding of the agreement. So as of right now, you know, no agreement. It doesn't seem like much has changed. I've been advocating for the president just to basically declare victory,
yes,
and pull our forces out before there's unfortunate mistake that happens when we exchange fires. We've gone through a couple different iterations where we say the ceasefire is holding, but then we have some brush with the Iranians. We just had our base in Kuwait was at least targeted. We intercepted the missiles, but the thing with us having to be there in those contested areas is we have to be lucky always. The enemy only has to be lucky once. If tragically we end up losing some troops in one of these exchanges, then we're not going to be able to leave. So right. I'm saying, like, right now, while we can, let's just punch out. We can work everything else out quietly behind the scenes. And Trump can say that he won this whole thing, because I don't believe right now with the hard lines that he's drawn, the poison pills, I don't think the Iranians are going to accept them.
Right.
They feel like they have the upper hand.
Well, that's the thing, right? Where they get the nuclear program, the civilian nuclear program, and they tie that together with, you know, kind of the mantra, the magic spell, which is Iran must never have a nuclear weapon. You're like, well, the fatwa, they agreed to not have one in 2004. We were the ones that left that agreement. Right. You try to explain that to people, their brains break. What would you have to say to an American that may not be aware of this entire situation and the difference between the civilian nuclear and nuclear program?
You know, I would just say if we look at the long course of all the data that we have on the Iranians, they have never sprinted towards getting a nuclear weapon. It's easy to characterize the Iranians as like crazy jihadis because a lot of their terrorist organizations will use some jihad-like references. And without getting too in detail on like Shias versus Sunnis,
sure.
The Iranians have always kind of had a very measured escalation ladder. The Shia militants that they support and they fund have only attacked us when we've gone into the Middle East.
Right.
So they haven't. These aren't the guys that are getting on airplanes to fly over here and kill Americans. Their nuclear program is very similar as well. In about 2003, the Supreme Leader, the guy that we killed at the beginning of this, he put out a fatwa, a religious decree, which most Americans would be like, I don't really care about an Islamic religious decree. Neither do I, quite frankly. I care about the actions that came next. So the fatwa said that it's, you know, forbidden for Iran to have a nuclear weapon. He, because they're their system is hybrid between, you know, the Shia religion and the government. He gave a bunch of Shia religious reasons why they wouldn't have a nuclear weapon. But also it was very pragmatic because at the time we had just invaded Iraq because we said Saddam has weapons of mass destruction. Saddam never really came clean because he wanted the Iranians to think he had a nuclear weapon. So Saddam always kind of beat his chest a little bit publicly about like, well, maybe I do have a nuclear weapon. But then a couple of years later, Gaddafi said, well, I don't want to get the Saddam treatment, Gaddafi in Libya. And he gave up all of his enrichment, all of his nuclear
program. Did not end well for him specifically.
Did not end well for him or for Saddam.
Yes.
So over time, the Iranians, they held the fatwa. They didn't develop any nuclear weapons, but they basically said, like, we're going to have what I call the Goldilocks version. They're going to have something halfway in between where they're going to say, we could have a nuclear weapon. We're going to retain the ability to enrich, and we're going to use some of it for civilian purposes, but we are not going to actually get a nuclear weapon. So it was less dramatic than, you know, what the North Koreans did. So that was actually holding. That prohibition was holding up until this last iteration of the war. And once President Trump came back into the office, number one, the Iranians withheld their proxies from attacking us. Under Biden, the proxies were attacking us because they didn't respect Biden. But they held back those proxies up until, again, this last iteration of the war. Even during the 12-day war at Midnight Hammer, the proxies didn't attack us. So the Iranians actually, I'm no fan of the Ayatollahs. I've fought these guys in the streets of Baghdad and Najaf, et cetera, before, but they actually are fairly pragmatic and they do observe a close escalation ladder. So they are people that we can deal with. We're not going to agree all the time, but I do believe we can deal with them.
What's really going on here? Why are we at war with Iran? What is the true reason? Because, you know, after us talking for a little bit, it doesn't seem to truly be about the nuclear weapon. You know, oftentimes it's like this game where they move the goalposts. Where they talk about nuclear weapon, then civilian enrichment, and then the ballistic missiles. And go, ballistic missiles, what does that have to do with the nuclear weapon? They go, well, we don't want them to be able to hit Israel. We got to have restrictions to their ballistic missile program. I heard Hannity talk about this. I've heard Levin talk about this ad nauseum. What is it really about? Why is this war actually happening?
This is happening because the Israelis, from an Israeli optic, and they're actually correct on this, this is probably the most vulnerable that not actually not right now, but prior to this war starting, the Iranians were the most vulnerable that they've been. They've done an enormous they've done a great job of actually coming back, and now they have a lot of advantages that they didn't have before. They weren't flexing before. But when President Trump came into office, October 7th had happened, you know, basically 2 years right before. The Israelis went, you know, they did horrific things in Gaza. But they did significant damage to Hamas. They did significant damage to Hezbollah. They had the pagers operation. They killed the leader of Hezbollah, Hassan Nasrallah. Assad had just fallen. So Assad was no longer there in their backyard, basically supplying Hezbollah. So they assessed that, like, look, our enemies are on their back heel right now. Now we need to go after the head of the snake, the country that we've wanted to take down basically for the last 25 plus years.
Right.
We assessed the Ayatollahs as weakest. We're going to go for it. But they knew that they couldn't do it on their own. They needed to get us on board.
Yes.
This is where you saw what I described in my resignation letter. The echo chamber come in. The Israelis really used the full scope of their access to American officials, American media, AIPAC, the lobby. It was a full court press to get this issue of, you know, enriched uranium front and center to move that red line. Trump tried to take that issue off the playing field with Operation Midnight Hammer by taking away their, you know, ability to enrich uranium. But the Israelis kept coming. I believe they were able to convince President Trump that this whole thing was going to be quick and easy, just like Venezuela. They got him on board.
Right.
And the rest, why he's not just walking away right now, that leads me to ask other questions that we can discuss. But that's kind of the short answer of how we got into this.
I mean, basically, back in the old days during, you know, the heyday InfoWars, like 2016, really to like 2018, 2020, we were basically Olympic champion water carriers for Trump. Like, he was our guy. We believed in him. Like, that's what I grew up doing. I was a child political pundit. Okay, so I sang this man's praises literally for a decade, but I did it from a genuine perspective of believing in the mission. And I said, hey, this guy's a pragmatist. When I watched the 60 Minutes documentary or interview, excuse me, where the guy says, you say you'd get along with Putin. Putin's a killer, sir. Don't you know Putin's a killer? And Trump goes, you think we're so innocent. I thought that was beautiful. That's the country. Like, be real, be honest about it. And then from there, make real pragmatic decisions where we can have cooperation and we can end the wars. I didn't realize he was just saying, hey, we're going to be able to do this, so I'm going to do it too. And that's the thing that broke my heart. You know, like, none of this makes me happy. Like, the criticism that we have to do, the due diligence we have to do, none of it makes me happy. And a part of me has to wonder how much of this is due to the boomer
problem, the old age problem, the guy who is 80 years old and probably sleeps for like 3 hours a night and is led around through a series of rooms to rubber stamp and sign various documents that he may not know anything about. And then all you're surrounded by are your friends, right? And your friends are all younger than you. They're all rich, as rich or richer than you. And they know the right thing for you to do. So just go ahead and sign it. How much of it is that? Do you think he's being, you know, I think he's in a bad circle?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of that. And I feel the same way you do. I mean, I got involved in politics largely because of President Trump. I took out one of the Trump impeachment voters in a congressional primary and then was honored to serve in his administration. So the actions that he's taken in the last 18 months, I agree with you. They're heartbreaking. They're very frustrating. A lot of this is the control mechanisms, I think, of just having a really, really tight circle. In the lead up to the 12-day war and Midnight Hammer, we had a really robust debate because the president does actually have, if he would use it, although it's being thinned out every day, a really diverse cabinet. And so the deputies committees process we were doing, the National Security Council process that we were doing, that was really robust. After Operation Midnight Hammer, his circle really shrunk. You've got it right there on the screen. That's kind of who he has around him in general. And obviously, if he would just stick his head up and look at the results that he's getting, he would see that, you know, what he was promised is not what has been delivered. And so why he's not being more critical and bringing in more advisors, I honestly, that part, I don't know. I was around the president enough. I mean, I wasn't primary cabinet, so I wasn't with him every 5 minutes, but, you know, I had a good deal of exposure to him. He's not senile. He's still very much with it. He's still very sharp. That's why, again,
okay,
a lot of times when people ask me what's going on, I'm like, you know, it is a head scratcher.
Okay.
Go back to like,
sorry to interrupt you. I'm notorious about that. I'm very bad about that. That's my worst broadcasting quality as a broadcaster, but getting back into it. When you're talking about Trump, I was watching a Mario Newfall interview that you did, and you were, you know, talking about the Hezbollah pager operation. You were saying, well, if they're willing to do that because it's in their strategic interest, what else, you know, could they be capable of doing, you know, maybe domestically to us here? I want to go ahead and roll the Greenblatt clip. That's clip 13, pager tactics. I want to go ahead and roll this for you.
We've got to start doing things differently. And the same goes here in Israel. This means that the problem won't be solved by yet another new Knesset task force. It won't be solved by the government just throwing money at the problem. It won't be solved by the IDF spokesperson's unit issuing updated talking points or suddenly using TikTok. Like us in America, you need to adopt new strategies, to experiment with creative tactics, to study the results and scale what works. Maybe it's a whole new IDF unit, call it 8300. To lead this fight. But we need the kind of genius that manufactured Apollo gold pagers and infiltrated Hezbollah for over a decade to prepare for this battle. We need the kind of courage that executed Operation Deep Layer inside Syria and destroyed Iranian missile manufacturing capabilities to undertake this mission.
All right, pause it. That's enough, Am. Get him off the screen. See, I take that as a personal threat, okay? You're not allowed to say that to me. I'm an American citizen. You work for a foreign government. Okay, and you could say, oh, it's American organization, ADL. I don't care. Where does the money come from? What are your thoughts on that, Joe Kent?
I'm not familiar with who that is. That's the ADL.
That's the head of the ADL. That's Jonathan Greenblatt.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure what he was getting at there, but look, the Israeli influence in our own government, I think, is something that we don't take seriously enough. It's almost become something taboo to talk about behind closed doors. I saw that. I was surprised that nobody was just kind of calling it out. We do a very bad job of we on one hand will recognize that Israel has a very capable intelligence service that's actually very impressive. But then we kind of are naive and think that they would not use that against us when American support for Israeli operations is basically essential for the survival of their country.
Sure.
And so I think we need to be much more realistic, especially as we kind of scratch our head and say, like, what could be influencing President Trump?
So the reason the reason why I throw that up, Harrison Smith, who's done an interview with you, he's got a video. It's got like 35 million views. It's called The Eight Front War. And it's basically a montage of Netanyahu saying, hey, you know, the next real battle, you know, is digital. It's information. We got to do media. And the reason why I played the video clip of Greenblatt runs the ADL. We look at it as domestic American citizens, as people that do media. This is like, you know, this is Red Dawn. This is the people parachuting in from a foreign government, a foreign country. And you can say, oh, it's an American organization, blah, blah, blah. No, it's not. It's not an American organization because Americans don't do this. Okay. And I don't consider censorship to be an American value, much like the genocide. I want to ask you this question right now. I got to be honest about this. This is why I got back into it. Okay. It was at first Ukraine, where conservatively, you know, 1.5 million people are dead, probably a lot more. But really, the Gaza and Lebanon issue. What is going on? Why do we co-sign this? Is it because Americans are ignorant because they don't know? Those are our bombs, right?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, we fund the IDF. So again, this is where we're just not realistic with the way that we approach the Israelis. The Israelis do a good job of having people who sound like you and I, because they're dual citizens usually,
right,
engage with us. So you can let your guard down and you can think that you're dealing with like some guy from Miami.
Right.
But really you are dealing with someone who has a very, very different view of the world and a very different view of warfare. And warfare is brutal. And the Israelis fight in a very brutal, old school, salt the earth type
rise
of way.
Rise and kill them first.
We're seeing that. We're seeing that in Gaza, yet at the same time, we don't acknowledge it that we're funding it. And I don't think we would fund, you know, one of our Five Eyes partners if they were doing something similar. As a matter of fact, I think that we would kind of call that out. But for some reason, because of the propaganda war that the Israelis run, because of how much money they pump into our elections, no one wants to come out and say that. And so we do turn a blind eye to it. And obviously, that's morally horrible. But also, like, we have to take a step back and say, like, what ire does that get us from the rest of the world? And is that worth it? Because at the end of the day, like, what do we get from Israel? And people say, oh, we get some intelligence, whatever, et cetera. But is even that on its best day worth the amount of ire that we get from these Middle Eastern countries? Because at the end of the day, Israel doesn't really have any natural resources. The only reason they're a regional power is because of what we give
them.
Well,
they make
war, Joe. At the end of the
day,
just speaking,
they make war.
Yeah,
they generate a need for the MIC, for the military industrial complex. That's what all of this is. And you're making the pragmatist, like, resource based calculation, which I also agree with. And it's horrible. It's terrible. I don't want to pay for a single murder. I don't want to pay for a single dead American soldier. I don't want to pay for a single dead Palestinian girl. Okay, period. Or Iranian. I don't care. Whatever. Just make it stop. And I think that's why your point of just telling Trump, hey, just declare victory and go home. I got huge issues with President Trump. I immensely dislike, perhaps even hate him now. That's my view personally. But if he just left and came home, it would be a lot harder for me to criticize him than it is right now. And that would objectively be good policy. What is your impassioned pitch? Why does that need to happen?
He just needs to look at the results. Like, if there was a military solution right now, if the Pentagon could come in with a cohesive plan that says, if we bomb, destroy, kill X, Y, and Z, we're out of this thing, he would have done it. He would have done it months ago, and this whole thing would be over. It's pretty evident there's no military solution. When we went in to go recover our fighter pilots, we got a taste, and we got very lucky. Thankfully, we didn't lose anybody. But we got a taste of how hard it would be to actually do boots on the ground. We attempted some goofy, we're going to arm the Kurds. Nobody, I guess, consulted a map to see, like, how small the Kurdish territory is compared to the rest of Iran. So there's no military solution. There's no boots on the ground solution. If the Israelis could do some great intelligence coup, they would have done it by now. So our military efforts have reached their limit. That's obvious to the president. The diplomacy track, we continue to insert these poison pills, and the Iranians have been very upfront about what the poison pills are and why they're not going to give up and acquiesce, because they feel that they're militarily winning, and they're winning by not losing. They can expend very little resources, and they can shut down the Straits of Hormuz, etc. So basically, it's like, Mr. President, you are out of other options right now. You can control, for now, you can control the U.S. media and a lot of public opinion. Your supporters are going to go absolutely crazy and move out with whatever you say. So why not just say that you won? Every time he talks about Iran, he gives this punch list. He's like, we bombed their Navy. We killed the Supreme Leader. He does like a Trump rally speech on it, which is what he is incredibly talented at. Why doesn't he just give that speech while our guys come home? Because here's the thing. President Trump likes leverage. He likes to be in control. if we have our troops within reach of the Iranians, we are giving the Iranians the ability to drag us back into the fight on their terms.
Right.
Operation Midnight Hammer, when he flew all the way across the world to bomb Iran in the middle of the night, that proved that we don't need to have our guys over there within range of the Iranians. So he's still going to have the ability to strike them if he wants to. So there is no losing in pulling our guys out. It's only advantageous to him.
I've seen a number of prominent Israelis signal potential issues with Turkey and, you know, the new battle coming up. You know, I've heard Naftali Bennett talk about it. I've heard Jonathan Pollard talk about it. I want to play some of those clips for you at the beginning of the next segment. But I want to ask you right now, if you had a message to younger people about this war and why it needs to stop and why they need to care, what would you tell them?
I would just tell them that the reason why our country's leaders cannot put their needs first, why they can't address the cost of living, why they can't make the streets safe, why they basically are making any kind of economic mobility impossible.
Right.
It's because the trillions of dollars that we take in taxes are by and large being sent overseas. And right now, the vector point for that, like it's been for the last 25 plus years, is in the Middle East for another Middle Eastern war. And Iran is a much bigger country than Iraq or Afghanistan. It's much more significant.
Right.
The ramifications we're already feeling. That's why the price of the pump is up, making their lives worse. But I would say that this whole idea that America has to be the world's policeman, for lack of a better term, that we have to have this American empire where we control every aspect right. militarily of the world, that's why our leaders can never actually put our country first. So we actually have to be very judicious when it comes time to choose who's going to sit in the Oval Office, who's going to be the president. Because at the end of the day, the president really can't affect a lot of the different social issues and a lot of the different, you know, more local issues, culture war issues that get so much attention. Like the president really can't do a lot with, like, you know, healthcare policy, abortion, these different things that take up so much of our bandwidth, but they can affect foreign policy. And if they right. get us drug off into these wars, that will spike gas prices, that will send, you know, trillions of dollars overseas, and potentially that'll even send more young men and women off to die on foreign battlefields, you know, for basically for nothing but this empire. So yes. when we go to choose our next president, it's got to be someone that's going to commit to keep us out of these wars, to keep the Israeli and any foreign influence, I don't care what country it is, keep their influence out of our government and actually start prioritizing our own nation. That's going to make us safer.
Yes.
That's going to make it so that our leaders actually deal with what affects our daily lives here in America.
Yes, I 100% agree. And really why I'm a big fan of your policies, you've been good on Ukraine, you've been good on this. And I really think that's the litmus test for, hey, are we serious about no foreign entanglements? Because I feel like there's two power blocks in Washington. I feel like there's kind of the more Euro-Russia centric one that, you know, kind of wants a World War III with Putin and whatnot. And then we got the new faction that's concerned over the IMEC corridor and China's land expansion and the battle in the Levant with Israel being our aircraft carrier, so to speak. And I think it's really important that we have Americans out there that are saying, hey, both are bad. Both are a problem. We don't need to be doing these things. We're becoming Brazil, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know if you looked around at the potholes and the conditions, everything. This country is descending down the ladder. And I think it's important, Joe, that we got people like you that are here to talk about, hey, maybe we can do something about this. Maybe we can stop this slide off into oblivion and reclaim what we have or had. And that is, in my view, the American Republic, not the U.S. Israeli empire. And I think that's what we need to return to. We're going to come right back after a little bit of a network break here. I got a lot more questions to ask you on the generational divide. I kind of chuckled. I have to be honest. I was making my boomer jokes and kind of laughed at a couple of them. That made me smile. So we're going to get back into it. Joined by the great Joe Kent on the Alex Jones Network. Please repost, share the live feeds, share the live links. And do not forget, if you love this, you want to support the broadcast, go to thealexjonesstore.com for the highest quality supplements in the entire world. I'm Rex Jones, your guest host for today, joined by Joe Kent. We'll be right back.
Excited about the Alex Jones Network. I'm so excited to expand it. The bad guys are in trouble. Hell, we might even get InfoWars back, but who knows? But I couldn't have stood against this tyranny and fought them without your support. But a lot of people, not the majority, but 20-30%, believe the propaganda of the national news that we're off the air. And friends, family, neighbors, people at the gas station, Alex, I'm so sorry you're off the air. I'm so sorry, you know, the Onion runs your company. They didn't get it a year and a half ago with the fake auction. They didn't get it this time. They're blocked in court. They're in a lot of trouble, okay? We're winning, but I need funds for the defense and the offense and for the network and for everything we're doing. And I need your word of mouth to tell your email list, your text message list, your neighbors, your friends, your family. Hey, Alex Jones is verboten forbidden info. He knows what he's talking about.
Alex Jones called this years ago. Years ago.
Here is the URL, alexjoneslive.com. He's on weekdays, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Harrison Smith after that. We're going to bring more shows on. But we need your support, your word of mouth, your prayer. You are everything, and your financial support at alexjonesstore.com. So listen to me. We have ultramethylene blue tincture capsules and now the gummies that are a concentrate of already the strongest best methylene blue. So look out when you get them. But they're selling out, more coming in a month or so. We have plenty of the tincture and the capsules, but not the gummies. If you want them, there's probably 3 or 4 days left of them. Get them now at thealexjonesstore.com. Separately, I can do hours on this. Just go to Wikipedia even. Go to the UN website. Even our enemies admit it. There's an average 15 IQ point reduction in the West because of lack of iodine in the soil and in our foods. Iodine is so good for women, children, adults, pregnant women, but especially older people. But most iodine is a bound iodine to another element. Atomic means on the periodic table, it is pure. We're the only people that put out the pure iodine. And we have it, T3 trifecta iodine at thealexjonesstore.com. Get yours now. I got my iced tea right here. I take it about every 2 days. I'm going to take a dropper full of this bad boy. And this is so good for your brain, your clarity, your cells. It's essential. If you don't get iodine, you die. Again, you don't have oxygen for 4 minutes, you're dead. Don't have water for 4 days, you're dead. Don't have food for a month or so, most person dies. You know, unless you're super fat and you live 2 months or whatever. The point is, that's because you're not getting all the essential nutrients and vitamins. Iodine is one of the essential things. Look it up. And the number one cause of cognitive disability, officially, even the World Health Organization, is iodine deficiency. So get yours now at thealexjonesstore.com and be the reason this network continues on and can expand. You're funding folks that fight for your future and our own futures together, trying to stop a new war, trying to stop new pandemics, trying to stop the left, trying to take back civilization. It takes funds to do that. So we sell great products. So it's a 360 win. The only way we fail is you don't take action. Take action now, thealexjonesstore.com.
Today we celebrate the first glorious anniversary of the Information Purification Directive.
Order is the only path to stability.
Compliance is the only path forward.
Alex Jones is a fringe voice and a crackpot. Our unification of thought is more powerful a weapon than any fleet or army on Earth.
We have created, for the first time in all history, a garden of pure ideology. War is peace.
On May 1st, 2026, Alex Jones will launch his new network, and you will see that the answer to 1984 is still and will always be 1776.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Best afternoon show in the entire world. Really enjoying it here in the new Austin, Texas, Alex Jones Live Studios, AJN Network. I am your embattled host today, Rex Jones, joined by Joe Kent. But I was referencing a couple Jonathan Pollard clips, referencing the coming war on Turkey, and then, of course, the threatening of the nuclear weapons use back during the Yom Kippur War that I wanted to reference. Let's go ahead and roll these two clips.
I'm not so sure that we will have as easy a time with the Turks as we've had with the Iranians. I've been following Turkish military doctrine, and
the strongest army in the Middle East.
The storm is coming.
Yes, of course.
I
And they're a member of NATO.
And even worse, they're a member of NATO. So I look at Iran as a problem we absolutely have to finish. And I'll explain what I mean by that. Gaza, same thing. And the Hezbollah. Why? Why am I fixated on this now? Because we have to be prepared for the next war, which will be probably against Turkey and Egypt. For the United States,
all right, pause
and the
it.
West.
All right, so this is Jonathan Pollard. And Jonathan Pollard got a 30-year sentence for espionage, treason, whatever you want to call it. He was spying on the U.S. for the Israelis. Of course, he gets pardoned or whatever. He flies over to Israel. There is literally photographic evidence of him kissing the ground, kissing the tarmac at Netanyahu's feet. You cannot make this stuff up. He's also, you know, all the way back in 2011, being visited by Huckabee, being helped by Huckabee. So you can't say that this, you can call it extreme, but lens of thought is not at least prevalent in some of these circles and some of these people that are being influenced. Joe, what do you think about this?
With what he's saying, I believe it, because you're seeing the Israelis right now trying to do a lot of outreach to the Kurds, who, you know, have a long-going dispute, to say the least. With the Turks, there's just been a lot of saber rattling there. And this was inevitable. This was actually one of the other dangers of what we did in Syria by taking out Assad. Obviously, the big issue there was we emboldened a lot of jihadis. One of them currently runs Damascus. But we did take away some sort of a buffer that was between the Turks and the Israelis. And now there's going to be a competition in the region for who actually is going to be the biggest shot caller there, because the Turks, they're a NATO member. They have a very, very competent, very capable military as well. And that is just unacceptable for the Israelis. And the Israelis, I believe, if they can convince us to leave NATO or to get the Turks out of NATO, I think we're going to see a conflict there in the future. It'll probably start in Syria initially, but it's just going to spiral out from there. And again, like, what's our interest? Why are we even involved?
I didn't even think to ask you about Al-Shara, now Al-Julani, who comes over to the White House and, you know, kind of daps up President Trump. And President Trump goes, "You smell phenomenal. Look at this guy. He smells great." What is going on? I guess that actually makes sense if you make the Turkey connection and then what's going to happen there. I want to roll the second Jonathan Pollard clip. And this is one I've played this literally probably 100 times on my personal show. I always make the point to show people, hey, he claims that they've threatened the use of nuclear weapons in the past to get an arms embargo lifted. We don't know if that's true or not. He claims it. Let's go ahead and roll the tape.
For the United States and the West, nuclear weapons at any level, tactical, strategic, EMPs, whatever, are viewed as something that should only be used as a last resort. And even then, very carefully, on an escalation ladder, as they say. With me, I don't care if you start throwing nukes immediately, responsibly, but immediately.
And all right, pause it really quick. I messed up a little bit. I don't have the right video. He's talking to an African-American woman about nuclear weapons in the Yom Kippur War. See if you can find it and look it up on X. The point I'm trying to make is he's very flippant about this, and he says that they've threatened to use them before. He said, look, we were in a situation where we were hurting really bad. We parked the F-4 on the runway. We told the Americans to use their eye in the sky to take a look under the wing. Had some unconventional weapons on there. The arms embargo lifted the next day. Is this a way an ally should treat us?
No, not at all. I mean, in general, the way that the Israelis deal with us is not a way. Not even really an ally. A country that we are paying for. I mean, like in a business relationship, they are the junior partner. However, when you hear them address us and deal with us, it's not a junior partner relationship. And again, a lot of this is because we don't view the Israelis in a very clear-eyed way, but also because we've become so reliant on Israeli intelligence. A lot of our intelligence muscles have atrophied, and so we do kind of go to them. We're like, well, they are giving us this great intelligence, and we need it. I think that's nonsense. I think we have a very capable intelligence community. If we would just have to do some retooling here and there, I think we could do our own collection. But this is kind of the way the Israelis address us in general. And again, it's time for us to sober up.
Yes.
And realize how much we're paying for these guys, for Israel.
We're
and
drunk.
What we get in return.
We're drunk. We got a mistress and she's too expensive. It's time to end the relationship. Yeah. That's what it sounds like to me. I'm going to roll the Jonathan Pollard clip now, if we have it available. All right, I'm guest hosting. I'm a little junior. I make a little mistake from time to time. But once we roll the clip, people really understand the way it's flippantly talked about. And this is nearly, I think, 50 years ago. So this longstanding foreign policy of, oh, it's OK to bully or threaten or intimidate the United States. Why is it OK for the nation that we subsidize to treat us this way? It's not OK. And this is why young Americans are angry, because we've grown up in a world where we have not even an inkling of sovereignty. This is the problem. We're going to go ahead and roll it now.
OK, let me give you an example of that. I was criticized very heavily for opposing the ceasefire, the American imposed ceasefire in Lebanon
on us.
And I was told by certain people in the government, look, we didn't have choice because we were being threatened with a complete cutoff of arms. So I listened to this, and the individual telling me this said, you don't believe this or what? I said, I believe that the O'Biden administration, as I called it, did threaten us. But I said, you're mistaken if you think there's never a choice. There was a choice. He said, well, what? Is it to have our weapons cut off? I said, no, let me bring you back to October 1973 during the Yom Kippur War, when Henry Kissinger instituted an arms embargo against us. He stopped the aerial resupply of our army at that point to extract diplomatic concessions from us. And what happened? What happened was an A-4 Skyhawk was parked at Tel Nof Air Base with some interesting weapons under its wings. And we told the Americans, take your eye in the sky and take a good look at the airplane that's on that runway. And the next day, the airlift started.
Okay, take us out. We got Jabba the Hutt with a beard and a tiny hat threatening the country, bragging about how they threatened the country into submission. And he goes on to say the arms embargo lifted the next day. Joe, I don't have the credibility to do it. You got to tell young people about this, about like the denigration of our country and what's gone on. It makes me sick.
It's an off-balance relationship, to say the very least, to put it mildly, especially if you look at the wars we fought in the Middle East, the wars I fought in. I lost my late wife. I lost countless friends fighting these wars that really, at the end of the day, only benefited Israel. They obviously benefited, you know, the neocons and the military-industrial complex, but there's lots of crossover there. But we've just got to stop this. This next generation that's kind of coming into age and coming into political awareness, they've got to draw a very hard line and say that foreign governments don't get to dictate our policy for us, period, end of story. And we're not going to tolerate politicians that are deeply embedded with these guys. True. We're not going to tolerate politicians that, even though it's legal, are going to take millions and millions of dollars and still pretend like they have some individual agency and they're not influenced by this policy.
Well, I
said in my video, the young people give me hope, because I do think that they're not going to tolerate
That's a perfect tie-in, okay? Because what you're referencing is like, it's good for the neocons, good for the military-industrial complex. Who is that also good for? The people that own the most stocks, who are the oldest people. So it's like this demonic negative feedback loop. And there's a reason why there's support for these wars, technically. There's a reason why these people do exist. Like, they're not all bots. It's not all like a Mossad or CIA, like AI creation. There are real people out here that I've interviewed that proudly beat their chest and support these things. And they're all over the age of 65. I've met them. I make it my mission to talk to 20 people every day. I want to show you this street interview I did with the boomer, if we can go ahead and get that ready, because I'm on West Campus. I'm around all these young people. The one old guy that I walk up to and ask a question, he's immediately like, Heil Netanyahu, basically. Go ahead and roll the clip.
Iran has been a cancer in the Middle East for a long time, and this war is like chemotherapy getting rid of a cancer. My problem is I know too much about history, and unfortunately, we have to do this. It stinks. It sucks. I've lost a lot of money because of it. Have you ever been to Dachau?
You're talking about the Holocaust and stuff like that, right? What does that have to do with the modern state of Israel?
It has everything to do with it. If you go there, or you go to Auschwitz, you're going to see what happened to them. They have the right to return to what was originally their homeland.
3,000 years ago, the Bible says, and all of that.
It's all in the prophecies.
So you talk about Dachau. What about Gaza?
All right, pause it really quick. There's so much to break down here, okay? there's this weird stolen valor complex that the boomers have about World War II. And they think because their parents were involved in it, they were involved in it, and it gives them infinite license to paint whatever worldview they want. So that's number one, and the young people reject that. And Joe, if you come at them with the message of exposing that, I think that they're going to glom onto you, because that's how I feel. It's an outrage. Number two, he says, it's fulfilled in all the prophecies. I thought we were trying to stop an evil theocracy. I thought we were a constitutional republic. I didn't realize we were a theocracy as well. So you see the insanity, and it's just, they live in like a Marvel movie they've created for themselves. You understand because you've literally been there and done that, but the younger people understand kind of on an instinctual level, because everything's always gotten worse around us. The policies that have led us here are not things that we voted for or things that we wanted. They were pushed on us from decades prior. And a lot of these things, especially things the CIA does and military, other organizations, it's something that's handed down via administration to administration, and it's like webs within webs, and it just gets messed up. So what do you think about all of this?
Well, I think you're right that the boomer generation, like they have been pretty heavily propagandized. The war propaganda, unfortunately, still works on a lot of them. There's a whole other element of, you know, evangelical Christianity. And I'm a Christian. I'm a follower of Christ.
Sure.
But there is a whole propaganda wing that's kind of taken that over to weave in, you know, the secular state of Israel as being part of prophecy, which it just doesn't make any sense. But I think some of those boomers we might be able to wing back over to our side. But even then, like all his arguments, it's like, okay, fine. Even if all that, what you're saying is true, what does that have to do with like enabling the Israelis to invade Iran, making gas prices go up here? I just think that logic, even if you believed like, I don't know, half of what that guy was saying, you're still going to have a really hard time justifying this war. Sure. And that's where I think like the boomers are just, they've lost the younger generation. They've really lost the plot. And where the boomer generation is getting most of their information, it's, you know, it's from cable TV. It's from the newspapers. It's from mailers in the mail. When I ran for Congress, just a couple years ago, I didn't realize that people still like looked at the things they got in the mail. And they're right. Like, no, you have to buy mailers because they actually work. That blew my mind, but it's true. However, like as the boomers phase out, I mean, and we get more young people to vote, this is why I tell the young people, they got to get out there and vote, because like we don't really even have to persuade the young people very much. Instinctually, like you said, they understand, like, why am I supporting what's going on in Gaza? Why do I care about this whole Iran thing? If it was like we had to go strike a country that was about to strike us, it was quick and done really quickly. And it was clearly defined and explained to them. Smart. They'd get on board as long as it, you know, the facts checked out there. But this is what gives me hope. Boomers can be very frustrating to deal with, especially when we see the way that they vote and the logic that they use. But their time, thankfully, is kind of coming to an end. I don't, you know, want the boomers. My parents are boomers. I don't want my
sure.
You know, but sure. They're losing political power.
No, my grandparents are boomers as well. I have respect for my elders and everything. But when you watch Fox News and when Thomas Massie comes out, it makes the statement of, hey, to Fox News only households, please vote for me. I'm a good guy. We shouldn't be having to make appeals like that in this country. You know, we should have free and open debate. But unfortunately, we have that elder segment of the population that's been so heavily propagandized through time. I often say this, you know, you're young, you're interfacing with screens all the time. You're like, get away from me. But they have like this weird hypnotic worship with the TV. And I think, Joe, like, I really want to encourage you. I'm just a bumpkin sitting here. I really want to encourage you to do more media. And, you know, maybe even to do your own show. Hell, come on the new network. Why not? Right? Trying to go live 19 hours a day. If you're able to kind of do deep dives and explain to the young people, not just that this is happening, but that it doesn't make sense. We're looking for answers right now. And we're so disrespected. They disrespect us. Everyone under the age of 30. They say, oh, you just want to watch, you know, internet streamers. You just want to watch, you know, basically porn tier acting of people hitting each other and wearing wigs in the street. No. We care about the world we live in. We want to have children. We want to have a country. We want to have life. Joe, do you love life? What do you love about life?
Everything about life. I love our country. I love my kids. I got a 10-year-old and about to be 9-year-old. So I've got a lot left, life, a lot more life to live ahead of me. I love this country. I love our freedoms. I love the people in our country. I think it's the coolest thing that you talk to 20 people a day. That's an awesome goal. I think if more people did that, the country would just be in a better spot altogether. But there's a lot that's worth fighting for in our nation.
Yes.
And I had an awesome opportunity in my last job, right before I left the National Counterterrorism Center, to work with a lot of people that were just coming into government service, a lot of Gen Zs and younger millennials, the under 30 crowd. And they're sharp, they're fired up, they're patriotic. And really, for me, a big reason why I left is I watched my generation, the post 9/11 generation, really the zeal and the passion that we had for our country after 9/11, I watched that be exploited. And we got sent off. We thought we were going to save our nation. We thought that we were going to be like the World War II generation. We were going to go fight. We were going to make our country better, come back, and the country would just continue to, you know, become more prosperous. But, you know, after a while, I realized that we were lied to. And I see the same hope and the same spark with the younger generation. But what I would say the younger generation has that we didn't have is they actually have a healthy skepticism. And as long as we can hone that skepticism in the right direction, and, you know, like Charlie Kirk would say, keep questioning things. It's the only thing that keeps us free. And so that's really what I respect about this younger generation is like they really take that to heart. And so they give me a lot of hope. So again, yes, if we can get this younger generation out there to mobilize and to vote, we're going to take back the Republic in a big way. And I think big changes will come, whether that comes through the vehicle of the Republican Party or there actually is an independent and a third party that establishes just out of this frustration of the failure of the two political parties.
That's an excellent question. Sorry, I'm serial interrupting. Like I said, it's my worst quality, but getting back into it. So we're about to enter the post-Trump era because I don't think he's going to run again for a third term. He's an old guy. He's leaving after 2028, right? That's what's going to happen. We have a situation where we have these dark horse candidates, whether that's a MTG, whether that's a Thomas Massie, whether that's yourself, who knows, or somebody else. And then you have kind of the more establishment wing of like a JD, of like a Rubio, of some of these like big Republican governors, like a DeSantis or something. I really think that once it's all said and done, and once we kind of enter the twilight of the Trump presidency and move on, people are not prepared for the new world. And I'm kind of happy because I remember the time before all this, and we're going to return to that. And it really is going to be who has the most coherent message to get to the American people, because the American people haven't been given a message in a very long time. It's a smothering. We're not told the truth about anything. We're just led off on a various like rabbit trail or wild goose chase. We're going to enter a time where, sadly, things are going to get a lot worse and a lot more expensive, but that's going to make people realize that we actually need a change. Now, the dangerous thing about this situation is, I was watching Harrison do a show on this the other day. How does the communist agitator get the guy to join his side? He says, well, your boss doesn't take care of you. You don't have health care. You can't afford to eat, can't afford to take care of your family, can't afford to live. Come join our side, brother. Come be our comrade. And then millions die and cities burn. So we have to have an answer on our side against that to say, hey, we actually have Constitution, Declaration of Independence, Bill of Rights, common sense, all these great works from these great minds. And if we just adopt the system we already are supposed to use, we'll be okay. I think that's a real message to give people, is just fall in love with this country again. Fall in love with what this country really is, what America really is. It is a republic. It is a representative democracy. And I think at this point in time, Joe, it's very clear to everybody, even under the age of 65, I would just say broadly, that, you know, we have an occupied government and we don't have representative democracy. And there's a revolution over that back in the day. So what are your thoughts?
I think you bring up a good point about the post-Trump era, which, I mean, it's debatable. After the midterms, it might start then, because I think you're going to see a lot of Republicans kind of say like, well, you know, I got to start worrying about the next election. So they're going to start moving away from President Trump. But the problem that we're going to have that's going to create the space for, you know, a President Gavin Newsom or something even worse is going to be the amount of like just mistrust there is with anybody with an R by their name because of what happened with MAGA. What President Trump did in 2024 was historic. The coalition that he built, the 77 million votes, the popular vote, the Electoral College, because of the platform that he ran on, was amazing. But then what he's done in the last 18 months, he's probably jaded a lot of people from voting, you know, for someone who identifies as a Republican or anybody who is in this last administration. And so we're going to have to present an alternative. And it's not just going to be one person. It's going to be an entire team. We're going to have an entire team and say, hey, this is the guy at the top of the ticket. This is going to be the vice president. And this is going to be the people who are going to staff out his cabinet. And if it has to be authentic people who have a track record of being honest. This is why I think like that Massey is just so powerful, because he basically just has always voted in accordance with the Constitution, his principles, his district. Even though he was punished for it, he just walked out with all of his integrity. And I think that really resonates with people. And we need to be able to communicate this on the media and in long form too, because this the standard like political talking points and the media clips that get sent out there, I just don't think people fall for those anymore.
It's done. It's over.
It's going to have to be these type of conversations.
It's done. It's not acceptable anymore. It makes us all vomit. And we all recognize it. We all see it. That's the fact. That's reality. It makes people so sick, they're not even politically engaged. And that's a part of the trick. That's a part of the whole PSYOP too, is to make you feel so bad because you see the propaganda that's put out that you don't even want to fix the problem. And I think it's worth reminding people, like we just did, we're followers of Christ. We believe in Jesus Christ, the living God, and all of that 100%. And these people, ultimately, this is an atheist Satanist project, okay? If you look at anything where there's mass death, where there's loss of life, spending money for no reason, waste, excess, abuse, all of that, evil is a broken system, ladies and gentlemen. And we do not want to become evil. We want to become good again. All right. I genuinely think that we can do that. I want to ask you just a couple more questions about just party politics in general. What's your view on the Republican Party? What's your view on kind of the more right wing side of it? What's your view on, you know, kind of the Groiper wing of the party, if you would?
Well, there's the traditional Republican Party that I think is they have a lot of money and they have a lot of resources and a lot of infrastructure. But what's taking place right now with this administration, I just think that old GOP, the Country Club GOP, the neocons, they're on their last leg. Again, they're dangerous though because they have so much money and they can get us involved in these wars.
Sure.
We've got to continue to focus our ire on that portion. Everything else, I think we need to have a lot of unity. So
I agree.
However people define themselves, if they say that we want to stay out of these foreign wars, we want to put our country first, we want to get rid of the foreign influence, we need to start building that coalition right there and just acknowledge up front, hey, that's the principle that we agree on, and we can disagree on almost everything else, and that's fine because we're going to have time to sort that out once we apply the tourniquet, so to speak, of restoring our sovereignty.
Yes.
And that includes making alliances with people who, you know, might be on the left. And we're seeing a lot of those alliances being formed, and the mainstream will make fun of it and be like, oh, it's horseshoe theory or whatever. But they're making fun of it and they're attacking us because that's actually what they fear. They fear people kind of casting off the R and the D and just saying like, no more foreign wars, no more foreign intervention and meddling in our system and influencing how we conduct our yes. policies. That's actually what they fear. I mean, most Americans, when you poll it, they define themselves as being independents.
Yes.
And they get forced into the two-party trap. So I think if we can vector that we're the place that wants to have just a very high level but very, very important policy of restoring our own sovereignty, we'll bring people over to our side. And I think all the petty tiffs that happened, I mean, I've been in politics now for a couple of years. And so there's lots of petty tiffs. Like, I can't talk to that guy because we disagree on, like, you know, immigration policy, or he likes tariffs, but I'm a free market guy. And these lines get drawn in the sand. But these are people that we should be building alliances with more broadly.
Yeah, sure. You know, it's like we got a big, beautiful banquet set out in front of us, you know, the American project that we get to build, instead of, you know, all feasting off of that together. You know, we're arguing over a crumb on the ground. And, you know, it feels like that a lot. We're stepping over dollars to pick up pennies. We need to have a unity message. We need to have a power to the people message. And, you know, I was really happy to meet you and happy to talk to you and happy to see your speech in Grand Rapids. And I want to see more of what you got going on in the future. Ladies and gentlemen, Joe Kent, thank you so much for being here. Anything else you want to say in closing, and where can people find you?
Right there. I'm on X. I appreciate you having me, man. Honored to be here. It was great to connect with you this past weekend. And everybody, just keep your head up and keep grinding. Let's build out the coalition and take our country back.
Amen. Phenomenal interview. Thank you so much, Joe Kent, ladies and gentlemen. I'll be back in the third hour. Rex Jones.
These new data centers will oversee everyone in the galaxy. I will be in full control.
Power levels are stable. Proceed with the install. Copy that. Installing the module now. Connection confirmed. All green.
Cable secured. Power to the cluster. Initiating boot sequence. Component locked. Running diagnostics. Archive systems online. Report to command.
Construction team, report status. Power grid stable, TK-421. Cabling complete, no faults. Proceed to phase 2 for the Empire.
Things are going according to plan. The Emperor will be happy. The Empire demands perfection.
Status report. Any anomalies?
Diagnostics are clear, sir.
Proceed with the calibration. Watch for fluctuations.
I find your desire for privacy insignificant. The Empire's new data network will observe every corner of the galaxy, every signal, every act of disloyalty.
A disturbance in the Force there is. Feel it, you can.
Those who obey have nothing to fear. Those who resist will be terminated.
Ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.